Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 204. Continuing our positional previews for the 2025 fantasy baseball season, heading to shortstop, a very fun, top-heavy position that we're going to dig into and find some deep value for you as well. Before we get to that, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on the Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How are we doing, my friend?
We're good, man. Well, welcome back from yet another vacation. Not that I'm counting or anything, but hope you enjoyed your latest.
This is rich.
Hope you enjoyed coming out hot tonight. Hope you enjoyed your latest in the string of vacations that you've been going on there. So I hope you had a good time this past weekend. I missed you, my friend, Thursday night.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it was good. It was good to get away and now back to reality. And no other vacations really set up for a while, just business trips. Wow. Is what I'm going to call them. Business trips coming up is what we got coming next between real work and our fun here. So that's what's next on the agenda.
I think my next vacation is with you. Yes. Vegas, though. So
that is.
And that's definitely a vacation. So
that is
going to be a fun one. You booked your flights, right?
Flights booked. I'm rocking and rolling. I moved them up early. So we should both be getting in rather early. At least that's the plan. I know you still have to finalize yours, but that's the game plan. I'm going to be getting out late Sunday night. So, spend some time in Vegas. It's going to be a good one for sure.
Yeah, I still need to book. I think I'm going to go roughly around the same time. At least on Friday, I'll get in there early with you. It'll be an early morning, but that's fine. And then leave Sunday. Cannot wait. It will be a blast.
It's going to be awesome. The more we talk about it, the more ideas. It's going to be pretty, pretty cool if everything goes as planned, which will be great indeed. But before we talk about shortstop, I told you I won't do it every show, but I'm going to do it once in a while. So I'm going to remind you all, listener leagues, auction listener leagues, 15-team NFBC auctions, $50 entry. We have over 85 signed up already.
85? That's already more than, we only had four leagues last year, and
we're almost to six.
It's been awesome. It's been
almost a six already. Remember, in order to sign up, you either have to be a paid or a free Patreon member. If you're paid, you are guaranteed a spot if you want one. If you're a free member, you're on the wait list, but we'll probably find a way to make it all work, all things considered, when things are all said and done. The newest part to this announcement, final day to sign up is Friday, January 24th, 10 days from this recording time. That gives us about a week to set the leagues up, get you all signed up, and then get rocking and rolling with the NFBC to get the leagues going and start drafts by mid-February. That's the plan. So last day to sign up, either as a paid Patreon member or a freed Patreon member, is Friday, January 24th. That's why we are re-announcing the listener leagues to let you all know to sign up by Friday, January 24th. Anything else on listener leagues, Ryan, before we talk prizes?
What was the date again?
Friday, January 24th. You can either DM myself or Ryan. You can let us know in the Listener League link in the Discord. Or what's our email, Ryan?
BubbaBloomPod@gmail.com.
Let us know right there as well. All right, there's the league prizes based on the finances that are put into each league, of course. And there will be overall prizes we announced last week, thanks to the fine people at Baseball HQ. If you finish second in your league, you get a 2026 Baseball HQ draft prep subscription, full site access from mid-January through April. If you win your league, you get a 2026 full year subscription to Baseball HQ. And the overall winner for all of the leagues, the overall winner gets free registration to First Pitch Arizona 2025, travel and lodging not included. Registration to the conference, folks, which is still pretty dang awesome.
Yes, absolutely.
But there's a new thing we have to offer you guys, thanks to the wonderful people at Baseball HQ. We mentioned if you finish second in your league, you get a Baseball HQ draft prep subscription. That's for 2026. If you want to get some draft prep going for 2025 over at baseballhq.com, the draft prep is up and available on their website. But if you use code BubbaBloom, all one word, BubbaBloom, you get $10 off the draft prep subscription, which gives you full site access through April.
Anything full site access, which means, yeah, no, which is a great offer. Baseball HQ pretty outside of Cyber Monday. I would know this because I have run the social media for quite a few years with them. We really only outside of Cyber Monday, we don't really offer any promo codes or discounts or whatever. I get asked that quite a bit, especially kind of this time of year. So it's a pretty good, pretty cool offer. I think the price for $10 off. I believe the price goes from $49 down to $39 for full access through April. Both of us, right, for the site. The nice thing about it is it's not just the content, but it's the tools, the projections. I personally use the Baseball HQ projections. I was a big part in the projections as part of the baseball forecaster process. I do not offer any part of the projections as part of the Patreon because that is a HQ subscriber perk. So you get all that stuff and you get, again, through April. So you get that first month of the season included as well. So I do a weekly Fab article over there. Bubba, you do your daily matchups over there. So great time to give it a shot if you have not been an HQ subscriber already. So again, yeah, Bubba Bloom is the code. Go to baseballhq.com/subscribe and enter the code and you'll be good to go.
$10 off. Go enjoy. Wonderful people over there at Baseball HQ. All right, let's get after it. Shortstop preview as we work our way around the diamond. And it's a fun one, Ryan. So when people are looking at the old Bloom board there, what are we looking at?
All right. It's been like a whole week since I've pulled these boards up. I miss these things.
Not really. Seems you post wonderful boards in the Discord.
I did do a couple boards. Yeah, I did do a couple boards this past week. What did I post? Home run to fly ball and BABIP underperformers, and then strikeout minus walk versus second half. So yeah, I had to scratch the itch a little bit. Yep. While you were gone, but yes, typical structure to the board we are looking at for the YouTube crowd here. It's again our top 30 at the position at shortstop by ADP. We are using 15 team draft and hold drafts since Christmas, so this is like the last 10 draft champions drafts is where we're getting this ADP from on the NFBC, and then our projections again, which are color-coded for the entire position, so we can kind of see these macro-level trends at shortstop are from Steamer that are publicly available on Fangraphs. Deepest position? Is that a fair assumption, Bubba, shortstop?
Deepest position, yes. If you want an elite talent, it is deep in that regard too, but you have to take them early because they're going to go within the first like five rounds or so. So that's the difference. Yeah. Is if you want the four and a half to five category guys, you got to go early. You can still fill needs throughout the draft for quite a while if you need to, though.
Yes, and I think the other caveat to quote unquote deepest in air quotes position is coming off the heels of our second base preview, which was pretty thin. I think that the depth is it's a little bit of a misnomer at shortstop because I think in most leagues, your middle infielder is going to be a shortstop just because True. Of how bad second base is. So it's really in a 15 team league. I'm going to wager that maybe 25 shortstops are going to be started, right? Your 15 starting shortstops, and then maybe 10 at middle infield. And then the other five come from second base. And as we'll see, as we get deeper and deeper into this position, I feel like after about 150, 160, the shortstop cliff is a coming, and it is a pretty steep cliff. So yes, there's a lot of talent at shortstop. Look at that home run column that we're looking at. The entire top 12 at shortstop is projected for over 20 home runs with, you know, dousings of good batting average, good stolen bases. There's all that goodness, but just keep in mind, especially in 15 teamers, you need to probably have two of these guys and ideally by like pick 160. So that makes it, while yes, maybe it is deep, they are also, shortstops are also, I think, highly in demand, kind of going back to what you were saying in draft so far.
And I'll add on to that though, is yes, you got those guys going over 20 home runs for the first 12, but even 16 through 30, you have over half of them projected for like 14 or more. And you have 12 projected for 14 or more stolen bases. Yeah. So there's more red because they're either, some might be deficient in power, average is an issue, but you can fill needs at middle infield is why if worse comes to worse, you can go back here. I've been more aggressive in my early drafts of getting at least one really good shortstop and almost tag team them with one of these top 15 or so if I can. But basically, by pick 160-ish, I usually have two shortstops. Let's put it that way.
I try to. It's tough. I mean, it's all a puzzle. And we've talked about other positions. Like I've said, you want to get two catchers before like 200. So, the math starts to become a problem.
Mathing eventually. Yeah,
sometimes the math doesn't math. But that's ideally in a draft. I think that's what you'd want to do is get two of these guys and throw one of them at middle infield.
100% agree. All right, let's get to the positions here. As usual on our preview shows, if you have not listened yet, we go through 1 through 10 in ADP, talk about each one of those players, and then 11 through 20, we'll pick two each to discuss, and then 21 and beyond, pick two more as well. So if we don't mention your guy, it's not because we don't like him potentially, especially this position, because there are a lot of options. So if you have questions, let us know. Don't throw them at us, and we'll hit on them as well.
I do think we will, given the amount we cover ourselves, and then we had a lot of listener questions in the Discord. I think that fills in the gaps. I think we'll probably touch on.
We'll hit on a lot.
We'll see.
All right, leading the way with an ADP F2, going right after one Shohei Ohtani, is one Bobby Witt Jr., who probably would have won the MVP last year if it wasn't for Aaron Judge just going crazy. Bobby Witt Jr. coming off a 32 home run, 31 stolen base season, back-to-back 30-30 seasons. But this year he tacked on 125 runs and 109 RBIs while hitting .332. Just an amazing season for Bobby Witt Jr. in his third season in the bigs, which has been 150 more games every season. What do you got on Bobby Witt? I got nothing bad to say. I've been trying to, I'm the DC I'm in right now. I've been on the middle, the back of every draft. I had the second pick. I have a Bobby Witt Jr. share right now. I'm very excited about that. I'll tell you this much though. When you haven't drafted at the beginning, it's a whole different ballgame. It's like the whole team looks bizarre all of a sudden, but I love me some Bobby Witt, and I wouldn't be shocked if we see 40-40 sooner than later.
9 stolen bases only in the second half. That's the only negative. No, I'm just joking. Yeah. There's nothing. Bobby Witt has improved every single year that he's been in the majors. The volume has been there. Everything is there. If you want to take Bobby Witt, the question I think with drafters is, are you going Ohtani or Witt at 1 or 2? I don't know. You can debate that, whatever. I had the first pick in the current draft and hold that I'm in now, and I went Ohtani. But if you go Witt, I think you're just fine there as well. So I have nothing bad to say about Mr. Bobby Witt. He is the obviously the best shortstop, and I think up there with Ohtani, depending on your league rules, like what you can do with Ohtani as a pitcher, maybe that factors in. But I don't have Bobby Witt's really good. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, and Steamer hasn't hit 296. Yes, I expect him to regress from 332, but I'll take 296 right now if you tell me I can have that. With 31 homers and 30, I'll take his stat line right now at pick number 2 if you give it to me. And I think he's better than that, because to kind of tack on to what we talked about at second base with a later pick, having Jonathan India leading off with those OBP skills, there's the run production that Bobby Witt showcased last year that took a big jump. That's very doable again, very doable, especially then if Vinny P stays healthy all year with Salvi in the middle. Witt's going to have a chance to easily go for 100 RBIs and 100 runs, no problem, I think. Again, there's not a whole lot stopping him outside of himself right now is the way I'm trying to say it. So I know, again, not much we have to say about the guy, but I want to throw that on top. And everyone talks about natural regression, which is true. There ain't a whole lot of, negativity, even with whatever regression you want to throw out there.
And I think, too, this just popped into my head, and then we'll move on. But in terms of KDS, which is Kentucky Derby style, where you can kind of request your draft position, I think Witt is so far above. There's a 20-point gap between Bobby Witt and any other shortstop in the top 10. Well, Corey Seager's there at 13 points. Number 2 in home runs, number 3 in stolen base. He's so much more ahead of the pack at shortstop that I think it's worth setting your KDS at 1-2 to get Ohtani or Witt. I think you're getting too cute if you go to the back end or the middle of the first round. I think the advantage you get with Ohtani or Witt at the top is worth doing 1-2 for KDS or 2-1, however you want to do it.
Yep, totally agree. All right, the second shortstop off the board is Ellie De La Cruz, ADP of 4. So he's going, it goes probably Witt, Judge, then Ellie De La Cruz in most of your drafts. Ellie coming off a really strong season, hit .259, 25 homers, 67 stolen bases, played 160 games. We talked about him a ton already, and the projections love him once again, 26 homers and 54 steals. So what do you have on Ellie that we maybe, we haven't technically talked about him on previous shows yet?
Yeah, I mean, we have definitely eaten crow from all of our Ellie slander last year. Like, I will fully admit we were both wrong on Ellie De La Cruz as a fade where he was going in drafts last year. The improvement for Ellie was pretty legitimate. Like, walks were up, strikeouts were down a little bit. The biggest thing for me was the jump and fly ball rate for Ellie De La Cruz up to 33% from 22. He's an extreme ground ball guy, and that's what allowed the power to flourish with those 25 home runs. So yeah, projections love Ellie De La Cruz. I think he is the second best shortstop. I think what you need to ask yourself if you take Ellie is, are you okay with having your stolen bases all in one basket? Because if you take Ellie De La Cruz, you are probably, if you're looking at like projections for your team or whatever, you are not prioritizing stolen bases anymore, right? Because you need to, I don't want to say make up for it, but yeah, you do need to make up for like batting average and RBI and things like that. So just be aware that if you take Ellie, you're putting all your stolen base eggs in that basket, and there is risk in doing that from a redundancy, from a team build standpoint, where if Ellie goes down, I mean, if your first round pick goes down, no matter who it is, it's rough. But Ellie is such a contributor in stolen bases that if he goes down, it is a very big hole in that category. So I personally, the way I build teams, I am probably taking like a Jose Ramirez, who's, I think, going behind Ellie. They're like 4 and 5. I just think Jose Ramirez is a little bit more well-balanced, and that's how I like to kind of build balance in those first few rounds. Ellie De La Cruz is not the most balanced fella in the world. I know he's probably got good balance, but it's just a low batting average, high stolen base. And if you're counting on all those bags, like, they better come through. So
yeah, no, that's the big thing. And you mentioned the bags part, and then you also mentioned the batting average, which is something that we keep drilling home, that these early guys are such batting average assets. Like, 253 is way more common the farther down the draft board you go than finding a guy hitting 280. Like, you're just not going to find that many of them with the skill sets in the other departments. And so you have to really, like you said, you have to adjust your team accordingly, like, quickly, and make that work. So it's really no slight on, like, if you want to draft Ellie De La Cruz, go for it. Not going to knock that at all. Just know it's, you need to build accordingly. Like with Bobby Witt, or you mentioned J-Ram, it's pretty much the same on every positional category you're looking at there. So mm-hmm. you're sitting much prettier in that regard. So. Yep. All right. The third shortstop off the board with an ADP of 6 is Gunnar Henderson. Gunnar coming off another year where he made us eat crow. 37 homers, 21 steals, and a .281 batting average in his second full season in the bigs. Just kept improving on what we saw in 2023 in a big, big way. And I had 0 shares last year. That was a bummer. And currently I don't have any shares yet either in the drafts I'm in. But going at 6, what are your thoughts on Gunnar Henderson, who seems like the real deal?
Seems like the real deal. And something that I think the projections won't account for, but that could certainly happen, is we could see an even more step forward from Gunnar Henderson. It's just his age 24 season, which is kind of the crazy part. It's interesting, like, comparing Gunnar to Mookie Betts. When I combine like with HQ projections, they come out around even. Betts actually, for me, even has a little bit more value, but it's really? It's more that, like, yeah, no, I mean, they're on two opposite ends of the spectrum, right? Betts is not quite an old, but he's inching towards that, like I am. Whereas Gunnar, you can see future growth. And so that's the crazy part with Gunnar, is you could see in an age 24 season him be a top 3 player like this year. So that said, like, I do think if I'm not like dreaming on that ceiling, I don't know if Gunnar Henderson hits another 37 home runs like that. In the forecaster, we had Gunnar at 31 expected home runs, hits a ton of ground balls, only an 11% barrel rate. Like, that's pretty good, but I don't know if it's upper 30s, 40 home run type power. So he's fine. Like, if you want to build around Gunnar Henderson, like, absolutely go for it. I will not berate you for doing so. Gunnar Henderson is a hell of a talent. And even though he's like tied with Betts in the projections that I'm looking at, like, I could see him surpassing that.
Yeah. Like, if we want to say anything, is he slowed down in the second half compared to his first half production, like 10 home runs in the first month of the year. He had 26 home runs in the first 3 months of the year. That helps a ton. Still played well, .273 average, 9 homers in the second half. which is not bad by any means, but he was so good out the gate. Things slowed down in the second half, so that's something to, again, you got, it's all grains of salt when you're going this early in drafts with these players, but maybe he's wearing down, maybe he got hurt or whatever, but there were a few hiccups towards the end of the season for Gunnar Henderson. Seemed like a lot of the Orioles, honestly.
Let me put you on the spot real quick. Gunnar Henderson, or your boy at a different position, Kyle Tucker, next to each other.
I'll take Tucker.
I know, me too. So, like, for as much as we just gushed over Henderson, I don't think maybe we have a team where we take Gunnar Henderson, but like, I'd probably take Kyle Tucker over Henderson just because I think it's just the way we draft. We want the track record of Kyle Tucker, the balance of Kyle Tucker, knowing that, again, Henderson may have a level that Tucker doesn't have, but I think the chances of that are not huge.
Yeah, and we'll catch flack for that comment probably, but I'll stand by it because I have stood by that many times. But this year, I have not even had a chance to draft Gunnar, so it's been convenient to not have to worry about that situation. I have drafted Kyle Tucker, though. All right, the fourth shortstop off the board with an ADP of 12, the man you mentioned, one Mookie Betts, coming off his age 31 season as he's inching towards an old, where he hit 289, 19 homers, 16 steals. That was a drop-off from previous seasons, but he also only played 116 games due to injuries this past year. Mookie Betts brings that flexibility positional-wise for fantasy as well, but what's your thoughts on Betts, a guy that, like you mentioned, when you rate them out, he's pretty much equal to Gunnar, and Betts is a guy that I just keep passing on in drafts because I don't know why, and it's a fault of mine, I guess.
And I probably like Betts more than most. Like, I think, and to go back to my kind of KDS comment about prioritizing one and two, I think like Betts and maybe even Tucker, a reason why I would, after 1-2, maybe go a little bit later in the first round, because I'm fine with Betts later in the first round over Gunnar to get that earlier second round pick coming back. Yeah. The thing I'm concerned about with Mookie Betts is the power. Like the power, it's been a kind of a slog. Only like 19 home runs, right? In those 516 plate appearances for Mookie Betts, a 6% barrel rate last year. Not that's really my only concern though. Like, I'm not concerned really at all about the volume. It's a broken hand last year. Like, that stuff happens. Mookie Betts is leading off or near the top for the best lineup in baseball, as much as that pains you to hear. The plate skills are just as good as they've always been. The stolen base efficiency is actually, 2024 was Mookie Betts' most efficient year in recent seasons on the base pass. I think he could go 20 plus stolen bases. Like, the Dodgers let him run a little bit, and then run scored is just, the potential for that is crazy. So I think Mookie Betts is a fine pick going at ADP 12. If you're at the back end of a wheel in a 12 teamer, I think that's a great way to start your team. Plus you get shortstop outfield eligibility, which is just kind of icing on the cake right now. And while my brain is wired to draft and holds,
the eligibility is nice. But then when you look at the fifth shortstop off the board, it's why I don't take Mookie Betts and I take Francisco Lindor. Okay. Okay. Who continues to just be a beast. Last year, 33 homers, 29 steals, almost back-to-back 30-30 seasons. He's a year younger than Betts, but doesn't matter to me that much. And he hit 273 last year. It's been up and down average. That's inconsistent. So Betts has the batting average edge on Lindor, but Lindor's got the power, the speed. And to me, that's a big boost in this early round if I'm going to differentiate, because to me, 270 still doesn't crush my batting average, where like Ellie's 254. Could, based on this part of the draft. So Lindor ADP of 15, I'll take Lindor over Betts. This could be a future beer bet potentially as we go down the line this season, but outside of batting average, I'll take all the upside with Lindor everywhere else.
All right, I'm as you speak, I'm firing up the new doc, my friend. We have our first, assuming you're on board with it.
Yeah, first Lindor beer over bet. Betts, I'll take it.
Yeah. All right. Just straight up 5x5.
Yeah, Fangraphs player writer if you want. It's fine. Easy. All right. At the shortstop Mookie position. Betts. Well, it doesn't matter, but yeah.
Shortstop position. Of course, shortstop position.
Yeah. So, Lindor over Betts.
Yep. All right. Let's get some. We got it.
Do you have any thoughts on Lindor? Or just going to say Betts is better and move on?
No, like, I really don't have much against Francisco Lindor. Like, I'm actually surprised Steamer projects more home runs for Mookie than they do Lindor. I don't know if I agree with that.
No.
I would, however, take the over on Mookie Betts' 278 projection for batting. I think Mookie Betts can hit 290 and do so at 700 plate appearances, which is massive over Lindor in that 250, 260 projected batting average. So that's really the reason why I've got Betts over Lindor. I have nothing against Lindor, though. If you want to take, like, the floor for Lindor is on, it's like Freddie Freeman-esque.
Yes, yes. Which is something you should appreciate.
Which is absolutely something I appreciate. I mean, pretty much back-to-back 30-30 seasons. I mean, Lindor had 29 steals last year, but I mean, what are we doing? Francisco Lindor, I age 31 season. Like, I'm not worried yet about him inching to be an old like Mookie Betts is, but no, I've got no problem with Lindor. I just, for some reason, I like Betts a lot.
You always have. Like, every season we go through this Mookie Betts thing, and I'm usually wrong, except last year, but
was injuries. Were you right last year, or was it?
That's why I'm not victory lapping it. I'm just saying it worked out. But like, a fun question would be, and I know my answer, but would you rather go Lindor or Gunnar Henderson?
Like, at the, like, would I rather have the 15 pick?
Just same pick.
I'd go Gunnar. I think I'd go Gunnar.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
At ADP, I'd rather have the back end wheel and take Lindor and pair him with an early second round thing. So.
Yes. Yes. I agree with you on that one as well. And that kind of makes a perk also. Michael C, our buddy in the chat, says two of the last three seasons, Mookie hit more home runs than Lindor. Mm-hmm. He likes them both, but just mentioning that.
I mean, Mookie Betts hit 39 home runs in 2023, 35 the year before. Like, that's wild. I don't know. I see the power going, but we'll see.
You can't really go wrong. They're all first round picks. That's the beauty of it. This is where shortstop gets interesting now. So we have five guys going in the first round of a 15 team draft. Now we dropped 12 picks to the back end, basically, of round two to Trey Turner, of all people, who used to be a perennial first-round pick. That's the beauty of the game I think we live in right now. There's so many good players that things are shaking up. You got Trey Turner with an ADP of 27 right now, and he's coming off a season where he had 21 homers, 19 steals, so the steals were down compared to normal. Power about in line, but only 88 runs, 62 RBIs. Still hit 295, though. The batting average is great. Only played in 121 games due to an injury, but like, power was pretty much in line. Batting average was still outstanding. Counting stats definitely took a hit playing 30 to 40 fewer games. Where are you at on Trey Turner entering this year? Because to me, this feels like, hey, if you believe it was just injury related, this is a huge buying situation.
That's what it all comes down to. I think that's what I've got in my notes is like, I don't have the answer to this, but I know which way I'm going to lean. 2025, and I think the downtick in stolen bases was injury, because there's two ways you look at it, right? It's just age, like progressive decline, or was it just a blip because of the injury for Trey Turner? I think we know kind of what you were saying, Bubba. We know from a batting average home run standpoint who Trey Turner is. Yeah, like 280, 23 homers, like that makes sense. If you pair that with 30 stolen bases, this is a buy. If you pair that with 15, if you think the age is setting in and injuries and that sort of thing, you only get 15 stolen bases, then you're not taking Trey Turner at this stage. So that's the question you've got to ask yourself with Trey Turner is how do you fall on that side of the coin? And for me, I think Trey Turner's still young enough to where he can still get 25, 30 stolen bases. And therefore I'm fine taking Trey Turner late second round, early third round.
Yeah, I'm all about it. I'd be fully aboard that, still hitting towards the top of one of the better lineups in baseball in a very hitter friendly ballpark. I'll take a nice bounce back for Trey, which ironically same age as Lindor and Betts basically. Like, so yeah. We've talked about some of these other positions recently, Ryan, very young positions for some of the guys, and Bobby Witt's young, Ellie's young, Gunner's young, but now we got this Betts, Lindor, Turner world that they're all in that 30 to 31 age and are maybe a few years closer to moving farther down this board as we start talking here. So mentioned five in the first round, one in the second round. Now we wait almost 20 picks to an ADP of 46 to another shortstop. You're going to start seeing these drops. This is why we talked early on. You might want to be aggressive to get an early one or these types of things at shortstop, because these next groups of players are still very good, but you're starting to see a little more questions or holes in the situation and that starts with O'Neal Cruz, the seventh shortstop off the board with an ADP of 46. And I know we've talked about it. I've talked with Ben and others. I'm shocked at the numbers he put up last year because it felt like it was a leather loss season. But the dude hit 259 with 21 homers and 22 steals, and even more surprisingly, played 146 games. I did not think he played that many games. He's going to be shortstop outfield eligible this year, if all things work out, and that sticks together there, because I think he already is actually shortstop and outfield eligible. But what's your thoughts on O'Neal Cruz? Because when we started drafting, when I started drafting, I wanted nothing to do with him. But the more we've done discourse on this player, I've been like, you know what? He's not as bad as I thought. And as you look farther down the position, there's a discussion to be made with O'Neal Cruz, who, yes, is shortstop outfield eligible.
So you're coming around on O'Neal. You were. Yeah,
I am.
Yeah, you were very much not. I think he was beer bet on the other side. I forget who it was.
Yeah, I think I had Bobichet.
Okay. Ouch. Well, we'll get to him.
Yes,
we'll get to him. On the one hand, it is kind of wild to see a player go in the top 50 with the lack of track record that O'Neal Cruz has. And O'Neal Cruz is not super young anymore. This is his age 26 season. So I know he missed pretty much all of 2023. Like the track record in the majors hasn't been that long, but this isn't like a super young pup anymore. But the reasons to take O'Neal Cruz are, I mean, I get it. I don't want to be lazy with this comp because I think it's been made plenty of other places. It is like an Ellie De La Cruz type of profile where you're going to get a ton of strikeouts and a low batting average. The raw power is elite. If both of them just hit more fly balls, I think the difference between Ellie and O'Neal Cruz is team context, ballpark, and Pittsburgh won't run O'Neal Cruz, which I don't understand. Like O'Neal Cruz, yes, he had 22 steals last year. The dude could steal, I think, 50 bases. He was 22 for 24 last season. So he only had 24 attempts in 600 plate appearances. So I think that's the key for O'Neal Cruz to unlock this ADP is I think we need to see more than 19 steals. I think at the projection that Steamer's showing, 256 batting average, 27 homers, 19 steals, I'm not signing up for that as a top 50 pick. But I fully recognize that the stolen base upside could be 40 plus, and you could even see Steamer's projecting 27 homers. He only hit 21 last year. Like from the power department, Steamer's projecting something that O'Neal Cruz has never done before. And then there's this new, I was on Fangraphs yesterday and this thing comes up called Oopsie on a projection. I'm like, what in the hell is this? It's a new projection system that has just come out, I guess, that Jordan Rosenblum, who works with Eno Saris, is on, and we'll get more information about it, I'm sure, shortly. But Oopsie, which from what I understand measures like Statcast bat speed to get to power, is projecting O'Neal Cruz for 33 home runs. And again, only had 21 last year. So it's kind of wild for two projection systems to project someone for something he's never done before. And I think O'Neal Cruz is going to have to do that to get this ADP, but I also think he can pretty easily do it.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, I don't think we've seen the full O'Neal Cruz yet. And that's what makes this interesting. Like,
right.
If he's still the 23, 21 guy or whatever, it's like, okay, not bad. Probably not worth this pick, but maybe. Okay. I won't argue against it. But when you talk just Statcast data in general, what this guy can do when he hits a baseball, it's pretty crazy. So,
oh yeah,
that's where the idea of, you know, it is crazy to see projection systems, like you say, projecting him for more. But I think we can all like kind of think, okay, that is possible. Like it really is with him, and that's what's interesting. So, yeah, ADP 46. If you want to find out though, the eighth shortstop off the board with an ADP of 47, the grounded for the rest of the season, CJ Abrams, who is coming off a season where he had 246 after hitting 245 and then 246 the year before. Trends. 20 home runs, 31 steals last year, so a little more power in 138 games, 13 fewer games in 2023, but fewer steals as well. I am all in on CJ Abrams at this price, though. I am right back in. I'm not. Okay. Oh, yeah. We got a few questions on him. I am not worried about the punishment at all.
Okay. Because I think, I don't know if that's the big thing, because I mean, that was obviously the headline, him out gambling until 7 or a.m. or whatever, the morning before a day game. And then basically, yeah, like you're grounding. He was put in timeout the last, 10 games of the season or whatever.
I'm going to ask you real quick. When you were 23 years old, how great was your decision-making skills?
Probably down there with yours.
Yeah, mine were really bad. So I'm not saying that if I'm a professional athlete, I'm not condoning what he did, but I'm willing to say he could hopefully learn from his mistake.
And honestly, like, there's a lot of worse things you can do out there than stay up all night at a casino.
Yes, he could have been doing it. In Chicago, of all places, yes.
Yeah, so hopefully that's not like, I don't know, the 10th time he's done it or whatever, and then they finally just said screw it, and I guess maybe he learned from it. But I think from an on-field standpoint, I am in on CJ Abrams. I'm taking him over O'Neal Cruz. I think Washington, unlike Cruz, who will not run, who has not shown the willingness to run O'Neal Cruz wild on the base pass, CJ Abrams has. I mean, Washington, as we know, was one of the most aggressive teams in terms of stolen base attempts, maybe the most in 2024. And CJ Abrams is a big part of that. Leadoff, we've talked on previous shows how sneaky good Washington's lineup is. I actually think the strikeout rate for CJ, like, I think he could be, I mean, the batting average has been Chris Davis-esque. 247, 245, 246 last few years. I think there's some upside in that given the strikeout rate for CJ Abrams. There's enough power. We can approach 20 homers. But again, I think he can go 40 steals. And I mean, he already has. He stole 47 in 2023. So I really like CJ Abrams at this price. Last, and then I'll give you the floor. I think there's a cliff right after CJ Abrams. And I want to be one of the last ones before that cliff hits. We may disagree on where that cliff specifically lands with our next two guys, but I think CJ Abrams is where I want to go there in the third, fourth round.
I think if you were to like look at the shortstop position as like, let's say, a five level building, this is definitely where the first level drops to the fourth level. I'll say that much. I don't know if it's a cliff. Like, these next guys are still good, but if you want to like say, hey, we got to take the stairs down to the next floor, I can, if that makes sense to anybody, I go there. I don't want to say it's dramatic enough to be a cliff, because there's still a lot of pretty serviceable players coming up here, but to go from like, they're not all elite, like the elites by the top four or five guys, that's pretty maybe top six, then you got this next little pocket. Cruz and Abrams could get to the elite, and then yes, it does take a little bit of a hit, as one would say. But I think Abrams, and the other thing is with Abrams, his power increased this last year, and yes, he ran a little less, but I think there's more power potentially in this kid, because he's only 24 this year. Mm-hmm. Like, he's young. He's very young. So I think it's one of those hit towards the top of the order. If this offense is as good as we keep thinking they are, we got 100 runs here, let's say 80 RBIs. What if he starts hitting 25, 26 homers and steals 40 bags? I guess it's a big boy season, and I think there's a lot. Like, it's a Francisco Lindor line. Like, that's what it is to me. The averages his average is a little less than Frankie, but
fewer homers, but a lot more steals. Yeah. I can see the
Francisco Lindor situation here going 32 picks later. Like, this is, I might be over optimistic, because I am all in on CJ Abrams this year, but I think that's there. He's 24 years old. So I wouldn't get too scared of taking that pick unless for some reason there's a ton of news that we do not know about with him, but I think that would have been out by now, I'd hope.
So you think like the knucklehead factor, like he's just some, like, you think that's pretty low? I'm
thinking it's low. If it's not, hey, I'll eat crow this year and we'll just move on for the rest of our lives from him. But I'll take the discount right now and see where that goes.
Yeah. Agreed. 2 years younger than O'Neal Cruz, which is, at least from a baseball age standpoint, that's kind of crazy.
All right, now talking about a guy that doesn't run at all, Corey Seager, ADP of 54. Corey Seager played 123 games last year, after playing 119 the year before. He hit 30 home runs for the third straight year. That was nice. One stolen base, so he's got that going for him. Hit 278. To me, it's like, we know who Seager is. If you want a pretty good batting average with power, that's awesome, but he's going to miss time, and that's going to hurt his counting stats, and he's not going to run. So it's just, it's always just a, he's off the board for me. And unless it's the perfect build, like if you want to pair him up with a speed guy like Ellie, I guess, but
Ellie, I mean, that's,
it's yeah. just tough for me to click that one.
That's the point I was going to make, is you basically need to take Ellie De La Cruz or someone like him, which there aren't too many, to, I think from a, in a, at least in a roto league, to make that category balance work with Corey Seager, because yeah, that those three projected stolen bases, you are well behind the rest of the position if you do that. So I'm not saying Corey Seager's a bad pick. I like I've said, both of us have said the last couple of years, you just need to have a plan for stolen bases and know what you're going to do there. That said, I did write in the Baseball Forecaster about Corey Seager. One of the stronger bets for a 300 batting average, 30 home run season in the player pool. So I don't want to undersell how good Corey Seager is from a real baseball standpoint and from those other four categories. It's the stolen base thing. And like you said, we can pretty much rest assured he will miss some time. I think my man had two hernia surgeries last year, which is rough. The most recent one in September. So like should be good for spring, but I don't know. I just don't get the warm and fuzzies if I'm taking a top 60 pick. I want a little bit less of time spent recently on the injured list for Corey Seager.
Yeah, going to be an amazing softball lineup. It's going to be a great lineup to score runs, but mm-hmm. you got to be in the lineup to do that.
If you took Ellie, would you consider Corey Seager? Or is the injury history too much for you to do that?
Yeah, I'd probably pass still. I have never been a Corey Seager guy. Like, I'd rather wait for a guy going to pick 153 or something like that. I know it's a gap in batting average, or go for the guy going to 159. If you want to go there, I could see that being interesting as well. I'm just going to pass on Corey Seager. It's not my bag. All right, the 10th shortstop off the board, and it's been a heck of a talking point, because you go from an ADP of 54 with Seager to an ADP of 82 with Willy Adames. Willy Adames, the new San Francisco Giant. Willy Adames coming off 32 homers and 21 steals with a 251 batting average. A lot of career highs in that sentence right there, folks, with the Brewers. Now goes to a more pitcher-friendly ballpark. That's been discussed plenty. Projections still have him for 25 homers and 14 steals. Well, it's not like it's a dead season, but it's not what he did in Milwaukee. I'm very aware of that. Yeah. I don't mind him, though, if you missed out on the early guys. I have a couple of Adames shares because I think there still is a drop-off coming after him, after Willie. But what are your thoughts on Willie Adames? I know a lot of people hate the signing in San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, you covered it well. I'm not going to add too much onto that. I Willie Adames projection wise comes out right around where he's getting picked. So yeah, like yes, it's the most obvious thing in the world to say Willie Adames is going to regress back from last season, and then you tack on San Francisco. But the market, I think that's all built into the price at an 82 ADP. I think that price is it's not a steal. I think the batting average is rough, and I don't know, the stolen base is just a complete wild card. He could go Matt Chapman on us. He could go Tyro Estrada on us. We just don't know. And so really for that reason, I try to limit uncertainty as much as possible in the top 100. I am out on Willy Adames this year. It's not to berate the talent or anything. I think, again, it's a fine pick. I just, for those two reasons, I'm not taking him there. And thus, I mean, that kind of goes back to my Cliff comment about CJ Abrams. If I don't like Corey Seager, I don't like Willy Adames. You know, I don't like Matt McClain next at 96. The next guy's like Ezekiel Tovar, 120. Like, so like that's almost 100 picks after CJ Abrams. So that's where I was kind of going with that from a position standpoint.
It's fair. And as we go into the next section here, I get your Cliff comment a little bit more now, because yeah, it's like Seager, Adames, McClain, Tovar, Volpe to an extent. There's a pocket I want nothing to do with at shortstop, and then I get back into it, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so it's kind of so it's like almost like going down a hill and then I kind of come back up for a second. So it's a great time to start drafting, you know, a couple pitchers, maybe another outfielder, go get your third baseman, or first baseman, for those are all gone, because those all go like 1 to 120 the last pocket there. It's a good time to start doing those things. When we do our pocket of ADP discussions in about a month, that'll make a lot more sense, I think, when we start talking about this position. Just looking at the ADP based on this Bloom board right here, yeah, it is kind of like a hill, and then it goes down and it comes back up again.
Yeah, for me, I can't see myself taking a shortstop It's either top 50 or I'm waiting until 150.
Yeah.
It's kind of nuts. Given all those names you just rattled off. So yeah, I just kind of learned that now.
All righty. Well, at least I can teach you something once in a while. That's good.
Thank you, Professor.
All right. The glasses do work. 11 through 20 here. We got Matty McClain, Ezekiel Tovar, Anthony Volpe, Bo Bichette, Xander Bogaerts, Xavier Edwards, Mason Wynn, Jeremy Pena, Dansby Swanson, and Sedane Rafaela, going from ADP 96 to 186. So a 90 pick situation here for these 10. As usual, we'll go through two guys we like. And Ryan, the floor is yours for your first one, who I'm a big fan of as well.
Yeah, I know I'm leaning on the projections quite a bit on this one, but it's Dansby Swanson, who is going at an ADP of 165. But when I look at the projections on my sheet, that is on par, if not better, than almost anybody going ahead of him up until Willy Adames. So the projections are obviously weighing the track record of Dansby Swanson. Like, I will fully admit, Dansby Swanson was one of the worst hitters in baseball for a good chunk of 2024. Did turn around late. Yep. I think the day after the season, had core surgery on his core. So obviously that was bothering him, and we didn't know about it. He's balanced, right? He's not great in any single category, but you're getting, I don't want to say a batting average that won't hurt you. The projections to it, 245, like that's not great, but 19 homers, 14 steals, you're getting a boatload of plate appearances with Dansby Swanson. And again, the price is just so cheap at 165. I mean, I like him straight up better than Matt McClain, who's going 96. So I think for all those reasons, Dansby Swanson will be on a ton of my teams, hopefully at middle infield.
Yes.
But even if it's at shortstop, it's maybe not the end of the world. I don't know. Maybe it is.
I was going to say middle infield would be awesome, but if you missed, that's a pretty good consolation prize. I'm with you as well. And the big thing, as you mentioned, which is even crazier to think, the fact he had core surgery like right after the season, his second half, let alone his September, was outstanding. So he hit 281 with seven, 281-7 homers and 14 steals in the second half of the year after five steals, nine homers, but 212 average in the first half. Hit 303 with four homers and four steals in September. Like, I don't know what happened there, but that's pretty crazy to think about. All things said and done, I have a lot of Dansby Swanson when it comes to underdog right now, because he's going
okay
at a level that is pretty sweet. So I've been digging in on that quite a bit. So, all right, my first one off the board here is a guy that he better come through, because I've said way too much about him this off season. And I was told not to talk about him in our Discord, but sorry. Mason Wynn coming with an ADP of 160, going five picks ahead of Dansby Swanson. Mason Wynn hit 267 last year, 15 homers, 11 steals in his first full season at the big league level. And it's a season that we saw him, to me, get better and better and more comfortable at the plate as the season went on. We saw him, he hit for a better average in the first half of the season, 284 to 247, but he hit five homers in the first half, 10 in the second half of the season, ran less in the second half too. So a lot of questions to see exactly what takes place there. But for me, the biggest things, he's going to be 20, I believe only 22 this year, actually, which is even crazier to think about. Maybe 23 this year, sorry. But we saw in the minors, we saw in 2022, 12 homers, 43 steals. 2023, 18 homers, 17 steals. There's a power speed guy there. I know I keep harping on it, but when Matt Thompson came on the Cardinals preview for me, said Mason Wynn is a good defender with a good hit tool, and the power is going to get better and better each year. Don't expect it in year one, but he's a 2020 upside type guy. And that's what I'm going to lean on. And I know I see you cringing, and I've had other people tell me you look deeper at stuff, and there's some questions about Mason Wynn, but he's projected to lead off for the Cardinals, which could help in the run production thing, which also means he can get on base, steal some more bags potentially. And I think the power is legit. So I'll take the chances, and I've been saying it all along, like, he's this year's Zach Neto to me. Maybe he's going a little earlier than Neto went last year, but kind of that guy that goes and does get 2020. Projections have him at 18 and 16, so he's not that far off from getting there. So I like Mason Wynn a ton. Again, I prefer him as my middle infielder, like you do Dansby Swanson. But, like, I've had drafts where I'll double-tap a Wynn Swanson if I have to, and I'm okay with that. So just get aggressive. If you're not having a shortstop by now, get real aggressive.
So, yeah, I hope you're right. I hope you're right with Mason Wynn. I just worry about the lack of category juice. Like I don't think he hits 18 home runs this year. Mason Wynn has his career high is 24 home runs, and a lot of that was in Double A. Oh no, sorry, 12. No, what the hell am I looking at?
18 and 2023
in Triple A.
At 21 years old.
So Steamer's projecting a career high in Triple A. It's Triple A, man. Home runs are like doubles.
That was that. Can I say as in 105 games, by the way?
Okay, whatever. I will give you that Mason Wynn doubled his barrel rate last year, so the power is growing. However, that doubling was from 2 to 3.7.
So you're saying there's a chance.
I think everything you said about like the, and again, this is a 22-year-old. I think in doing these podcasts with you the last few years, this is a flaw in my game. I think to just think this is who Mason Wynn is when he's just 22 years old. But I think the projections are expecting Mason Wynn to do things, especially from the power standpoint, that I don't think he can do quite yet. So I'd like to see more hard contact from Mason Wynn. I think there's a chance he doesn't get 10 home runs. And yes, he stole a ton of bases in the minors, but has not really done so in the majors. I mean, 11 steals last year and 637 plate appearances. Like, what? Why would that change next year? Like, everything with that organization is the same, unfortunately, much to the chagrin of St. Louis fans. So I don't know. I disagree on the pick, but I certainly know I've been wrong in this situation many times, especially for folks that are of the age of Mason Wynn. So we'll see.
Yep. Looking forward to seeing how I can conjure up a beer bet on this one.
Did I do a dismissive hand wave?
Oh yeah. I saw that. And then I saw your face. And I'm like, yep, that's good.
Oh damn. I didn't mean to shush you away like that, man.
I'm used to it.
Apologies.
No, it's all good.
Subconscious.
All that means is when we're drafting tout together, he's available for me and not for you. So that's great.
Yeah.
All right. Who's your second one on the list? Cause I can't wait to hear the description on this one. After what you just shoot me away on. Go, yeah, go. He's going 14 picks before Mason Wynn.
He is. And I would take him over Mason Wynn. Maybe that's our
bet.
I'm gonna go Bo Bichette. I don't know how this is gonna work. I think you take the pro side of this outlook for Bo Bichette is kind of what everyone knows. This is someone who has already been one of the best fantasy players in baseball in 2021. He was very, very good in 2022. Things have, yes, precipitously, or maybe not even precipitously, things have unraveled for Bo Bichette. But I just think once you display a skill, you own it, especially when you're just entering your age 27 season, as Bo Bichette is. And again, I think the price at 146, I think you can take that risk. You can take that shot in drafts. And if you're wrong at 146, not the end of the world, so be it. The flip side, right? So I'll get ahead of it, because I think you're doing that dismissive hand thing.
My hands are right just, here.
You're wanting to. I'm glad I can. Glad I can see your hands. There is risk that if you're banking on this rebound for Bo Bichette, you are assuming that these injury problems are just going to poof, go away. And I don't, I'm not naive enough to think that just one off season of the injuries that Bo Bichette has had recently in his career will just poof, go away. But if they do, this is somebody who is, I mean, an absolute breakout candidate at 146. So I'm willing to take that bet where Bo Bichette's going.
All right, couple questions for you.
Here we go.
Yeah, because the injuries were soft tissue, so keep that in mind.
Yes,
But so you said if you have shown a skill, you own a skill. Isn't that something? What were you saying with that one with him?
Yeah, once you display a skill, you own it.
When you display a lack of skills, do you own it too?
Depends how long it's been for. Bo Bichette has for much longer displayed that he has the skills than displayed that he has not.
Okay. What I will say is, because yes, I would still take Swanson over him. I take Wynn over him. I take my next guy I would talk about over him. But if Bichette were to fall in a draft, I'd be willing to buy back in as my middle infielder. I'd be interested in that because at worst, the speed is always a big issue. Even Arico mentioned that on the Jays preview. Like, they just don't know if he'll ever run the way he used to run. But the power is, he's got the power. That's a skill he has showcased, like you mentioned. And more importantly, he's batting average. And as you keep going through the back end here, Bichette has been a batting average asset. So I will support that part of this discussion for sure. Like, if you want him as a middle infield, like, whereas Swanson, Wynn, and my other guy, I would be okay if I missed on shortstop being my starting shortstop. Bichette has so many questions, and I think the depletion and speed and whatnot, he needs to be my middle infielder, if that makes sense to anybody.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a team context of when I would be willing to draft Bo Bichette and when I would not be willing to draft Bo Bichette. Now, Bichette will fall in drafts. That's the fun thing about him, because he is a very, I don't know if polarizing is the right word, but there's a lot of question marks. Like, he goes anywhere from the last 10 drafts, 127 to 162. So now he's in that pocket that we're talking about here. And that's where I just wanted to bring a counter argument. I was going to come blowtorch your whole thing, but
I came a little warm with it's Lucy okay. Wynn, I'll admit.
It's okay. You've always done that with the young guys, and it's like at least 50-50. So that's fine. Like, you got to stay consistent. But Bichette, like, I see the reasons to buy back, especially at the ADP. At the same time, I am concerned that the injuries, and something we didn't even really mention unless I missed it, he might not even be on the Blue Jays at any point this season. And you would think that'd be an upgrade.
Well, I was going to say, is that a bad thing? I don't know.
You think it'd be an upgrade, but you never know. Yeah. You never know. Like, what if he goes to Detroit because all of a sudden, you know, Trey Sweeney's hurt and they need a shortstop? Is that really an upgrade? Like, there's little weird little pockets like that that we can't predict when drafting. That is fair. But if you're going to start deciding between player A, B, and C, those are the kind of things, at least I try to, if I need a pencil, a guy in or out. So, just throwing that out there.
Are we beer betting Bichette versus Mason Wynn?
I'm debating that one. Yeah, you can throw it on the board. Throw it. Do it.
All right. Mason Wynn.
Straight up.
Great podcasting here as I type into
it. See, I've taken again, just for the listeners, I've taken the lower ADP player on both of these, by the way. Just
dude, it's what? One... BS on that one. Loyal listeners to the show know we hold ourselves accountable with these bets. We did a whole episode revisiting these at the end of the season, so we will
and then
we've been slacking a little bit on beer bets, so let's
hold ourselves accountable when we get to FPAS and we go golfing and we pay up for those beer bets.
That's when we all win, of course.
Yes, that's where it's kind of a win-win situation all the way around. All right, my other player in this 11 through 20 range, and it's a guy that is really growing on me at this ADP, because I feel like last year after a big 2023, his ADP was pushed up. Now we're reverting back to a good ADP of 163 for Jeremy Peña. This is a world that I can live in with this ADP. Last year we saw him hit 266 after hitting 263 and 253. Pretty consistent. 15 home runs last year after hitting 22, then dropping to 10, back to 15. Okay, I can live with that. 20 stolen bases. Now, that's the question I can see a lot of people saying, is this who he is? Well, the Astros did run more last year. I'll say that much. That they Altuve had a ton of steals. That was a thing in this team. But with Peña, 78 runs, 70 RBIs. Like, this is a consistent 140 to 150 runs an RBI guy. 15 to 50. I'd say he's got like a, I'm going to say a 15-15 floor with upside, because we've seen that. We've seen a strikeout rate drop each of the three seasons since he started his age 24 year through his age 26 year, which is big. Projections still have him hitting 18 home runs and stealing 16 bags while hitting 264. I think that is a huge plus at this point of the draft. And we're talking about the Mason Wynns. We're talking about the Dansby Swansons. Like, these are all kind of accountable, like almost equal, depending on what you're looking for on these teams. Peña is like a four-ish category guy. Like, I don't want to say full five, because there's a couple of those are half categories per se. And the other thing that could be interesting, depending on how this team shakes out, like, roster resource has him hitting sixth. Okay, he'll still be very productive in this lineup hitting sixth. The guys behind him are pretty rough right now. What could also happen is he could end up hitting higher and you move Isak Paredes down the lineup. And now if you move Jeremy Peña towards the top of the lineup with Altuve and Yordan and company, Christian Walker, this pick looks even greater. So, and these are things we don't know drafting in the middle of January, but you can hopefully speculate and hope for. So I like Peña a lot. I think he brings a pretty darn good floor to this situation with a lot more upside still to come.
Yeah, for me, it's fascinating seeing Mason Wynn and Jeremy Pena, not to bring this back to Mason Wynn. It's the identical projection, the identical ADP. Yep. Like, they are the identical person, yet I much prefer Jeremy Pena. I can definitely get on board
with it. Because you've seen him do Jeremy it before. Pena.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I get it, but that's who you are. You've seen him do it. Yep. Like,
I like the price too. I think we'll see. I don't know if there's a huge next step, but being able to get someone who's just coming off a 15-20 season hitting .266, like, yeah, if I say Dansby Swanson can't hurt you in his balance, Jeremy Pena is just as good as that. So I like that. I like the Pena call.
Yeah. So that pocket of Wynn, Pena, Swanson, then it feels like this is where another cliff.
This takes is place. Death. This is unless you fall on Slick Willie. Yes. Falling off this cliff is rough.
Yes, as James in the chat said, a fellow Patreon member of ours says, feels like after the Wynn, Pena, Swanson tier, until you hit Slick Willie and Correa, it's another huge hole at the position. That is correct. Big Slick Willie, baby. All right. Next section of the show here, ADPs 21 and beyond. We'll pick two each. And again, there's still guys that'll get drafted here because it'll help fill your needs and whatnot. But it's not a lot of – it's more like three category guys. Is where you're going in this situation here. It's kind of like my argument for Zach Geloff last week at second base. Similar here. So, Ryan, who's your first one in this 21 and beyond?
This is more like, this isn't necessarily a target for me, but Zach Neto is someone who I think is an interesting discussion point. We've already talked about and anointed Slick Willie Castro as the 2025 mascot, so I'm not going to go back there. It was hard for me to find too many names 21 plus, and again, that just goes back to wanting to grab your two shortstops or your shortstop and middle by this point in the draft. But Zach Neto, I just want to bring up because I mean, this is someone before it was announced he had shoulder surgery was like a top 75 pick. And deservedly so. And that has now fallen to 193. The obvious concern here is the Angels' lack of information around what Zach Neto even had done as a procedure. And then, so not only that, but, and then what his timetable is. We have no idea. I have taken Zach Neto a couple times in draft and holds, and then just kind of in taking like a Scott Kingery later, just to maybe try and fill that shortstop void for hopefully the first month. And then you kind of hope the shoulder doesn't sap the power for Zach Neto. I just think he's a fascinating pick at 193, where like if Zach Neto all of a sudden reports to spring training and says he's healthy and he's hitting for power in the spring, like a 193 ADP is robbery. However, I think the more likely scenario is he misses time, and then you don't know what the power looks like when he gets back. So I have no strong feeling either way on Zach Neto. I just wanted to bring that up because I think out of anyone going outside the top 20, someone who could be a top 5, top 10 shortstop next year, Zach Neto would be my first pick.
Yeah, I don't hate it. Obviously loved Neto. We were all over that last year. So a ton of fun there. The lack of information has been very, very disturbing in that one. All right, this is where things get fun as well. Trevor Story, ADP 243. This is kind of my Zach Geloff narrative here. We saw him come back from injury last year, got 106 plate appearances. Really wasn't supposed to come back last year, but he did. We saw 2 home runs, 6 stolen bases in those 26 games, which is I'll take that already when it comes to Trevor Story. More importantly, though, we saw a guy hit .255. Again, small sample, but after going .203, .238, little concerning there. When healthy, though, the batting average could be bad because he still strikes out like 30%+ of the time. That's not ideal. But the power and speed's tough to deny. He's going to hit his bombs, especially in Boston and Fenway. And he's going to run. He's going to hit in the middle of the Red Sox batting order, which is still very good. Like if Jaron Duran's getting on, Rafael Devers is getting on, like there's a lot of run production in that lineup. If Tristan Casas is who many people think he is, like there's a ton a production potential for Trevor Story, even if he hits his .230 or whatever. He's projected at .223 with 17 homers and 22 steals. I think he brings a 2020 upside there. And if he can somehow hit like closer to .250, this could be an amazing pick at 243. And it's one I'm willing to gamble on because it's just been an injury riddled campaign, and maybe he's still going to be hurt, but he's going to be 32. This is a former perennial all-star. I know it was in Colorado. I get all that. But at this ADP of 243, I'm willing to take chances on a guy like Trevor Story.
Yeah, I like it. The way we picked players at this point, I got the first pick, you had second and third, and then I got last. I would have taken Story. So like I'm on board with it. Yes, batting average aside, you want to have that cushion, and health aside, like you could be cutting Trevor Story in April, but he's trust at me, least
on all three of my gladiators last year. I know.
Yeah, that was good, wasn't it?
Yep, that worked out well.
Yeah. So no, I like it, especially because I don't really know who else to pick. Like I've got, and I've kind of got a two-way here for my last picks here. I think in a draft and hold, Ha-Seong Kim is the price is dirt cheap. I know the shoulder injury. I know he's a free agent, but this is someone who's only 29 years old. I think in draft and hold, I think you can bank on at least 4 to 5 months of Ha-Seong Kim starting, you know, May, maybe June. And I think the discount on Ha-Seong Kim going at 320 is something you want to buy. I would not recommend Ha-Seong Kim in a fab league just because you don't want to start drafting injured players on a short bench. And Ha-Seong Kim isn't the one where you want to, you know, stash. So it's a draft and hold only for me with Ha-Seong Kim if you're playing the long game. And then in a fab league, what I like to do is kind of take that obvious keeper cut situation and put that in play. I would do Jordan Lawler, who is going at 345. If Jordan Lawler is healthy and breaks camp with the Diamondbacks, this and starts with the Diamondbacks, I know there's a lot of ifs there. This 345 ADP will shoot way up by the end of draft season. So I think just speculating on that alone, there's an obvious chance Jordan Lawler gets hurt or starts in the minors or does not have, and that's probably the more likely chance, does not have the starting gig. You just cut and move on. But Jordan Lawler, I like that kind of high ceiling. If it doesn't work out, you cut and you churn the end of your roster in a fab league anyway. So,
yep. Don't mind either of those choices there. For me, it's a guy I've been pretty aggressive on early in draft season. It's Luis Angel Acuña of the New York Mets, ADP 419.5. We saw him hit 3 home runs, didn't steal a bag in his 14 games late in the season, hitting 308. At AAA, 7 homers, 40 steals. In 2023, he had 57 steals. My point is he runs and runs a lot. We saw him in the Winter League continue to play great. More power in the Winter League. Still tons of steals. He's projected to play second base for now. We'll see how that changes. Like, McNeil could screw this up. There's a lot of moving parts there with the Mets. But, man, if he somehow finds his way into the everyday lineup there, which I think he should over a guy like Jeff McNeil or somebody else, or an Iglesias or whoever else they want to try to put at second base, Acuña's talent's undeniable. Get on, run a ton. Score back, even if it's ninth, the way that lineup wraps around, as much as I waxed poetically about Francisco Lindor, like there's a ton of run production for a guy like Acuña, who I think can hit for average, steal bags, score a ton of runs, and maybe he finds some power again. He'll be 23 years old this year. So I like that because, yeah, small sample, but we saw a 9% barrel and a 42% hard hit, much better than Mason Wynn last year. So I think Acuña is an interesting one. And since you double dipped, I have one because I was torn. I was torn on with these two.
Yeah. I love Acuña, by the way. I think Acuña, just real quick, showing as on the bench on rostered resource is probably lowering his ADP. And I think a one war 32-year-old Jeff McNeil is, like you said, not that much of an obstacle for Acuña. So yeah. Yep.
He should be out of the way. My other guy is Trey Sweeney of the Detroit Tigers with an ADP of 450. I know we liked him a lot last year towards the end on the fab columns. And we saw Trey Sweeney come up. He was in that Flaherty trade from the Dodgers, played 36 games, 4 homers, 2 steals, only hit 218. But the fact there was some power, some speed, drove in 17 runs over that period of time and scored a lot. Like, we saw enough there that I'm willing to not worry about the average because the dude hit 267, 15 homers, and 20 steals in the minor leagues last year. We've seen the power, speed, and average. He's about a 250 hitter in the minors, but the power and speed is legit. You have the Javi Baez situation just because they paid him. That's the reality of it, but it's probably a platoon, honestly. That's what, at least, you know, talking with Marty Tallman about it, and it makes a ton of sense. Why would Baez play every day outside of just complete stupidity for the Detroit Tigers, which is always possible, but this is where it's fun in a draft and hold. Like, Trey Sweeney can be your third or fourth shortstop, and then when Javi Baez eventually just gets out of the way, you have a pretty serviceable guy, that another young player that might find his footing this season. Maybe we're a year early. He's 25, but it's his first, hopefully, full run at the big league level. And maybe if he's on a different team, he's already been up there, but he's on the Dodgers. He's going to be held back before he got traded. I'm a fan of a guy like Trey Sweeney also later in a draft and hold, and a guy that we will definitely talk about on Fab episodes as the season goes on.
Marty crushed it, by the way, on your Detroit episode. Just want to give him a shout out. It was very good. Despite his Casey Mize slander, we'll let that one slide.
I saw your message in the Discord. That was pretty good.
No, he did a great job doing Detroit. So everyone check that one out, as well as all of Bubba's. You're in the middle of team preview season, my friend. It's busy. Yeah, it's busy. So, but no, you're crushing it. And Marty did a great job.
Yep. All the guests have been pretty awesome so far. And I'm looking forward to the rest of them. It's fun so far. It's just the returning crew, which is always good to have on. It helps make my life easier because booking is tough enough as it is. Having to book 30 of them is a whole other deal. All right. That wraps this up, Ryan. Any final thoughts on the position that maybe changed before we get into some listener questions here? Because I think we talked cliffs, or I guess peaks and valleys at the position. And has anything changed as we've gone through this?
I think just to the first kind of point is I'd love to grab a top 50 shortstop ending with CJ Abrams. I will not be taking a 50 through 150 pick, at least as ADP currently stands, because I don't like that group as much. I am fine taking two out of, once we get to like pick 150, I'm fine taking two out of Bo Bichette, Xander Bogaerts, Jeremy Peña, Dansby Swanson. I think you can take two of those guys and do shortstop middle. And then what we just talked about with this 21 plus crew, like I think we're okay taking, obviously, Willie Castro, but like Trevor Story kind of sold me on a little bit there at the end. So I'm fine landing on Trevor as a full last ditch effort.
Yeah. I have a handful of middle infield Trevor Stories already. That has been a thing there, but we are going to hit on some more because we have listener questions. You guys came through in the Discord. We have one from the old Twitter bot there. So let's pull that up first before we hit the Discord. This is from Jobu. Great movie. Watch that the other night, actually. Is there an epic Lindor season on deck? Well, I think at worst you get what you got. 30-30, that's pretty sweet. I don't know if we get 40-40, but I think 30-30 is pretty good.
Epic enough.
Yeah.
30-30 is just fine.
Is last year's demotion of CJ Abrams a red flag? I'm saying no.
Right. Yeah, we covered. Yeah, we both.
And then we covered this too. He says, "Where do we draw the line on what a Bo Bichette discount looks like? What's too much at the auction draft table?" So, price wise, what are you looking at on Bo Bichette potentially?
Oh, I don't know. Whatever a 150 pick goes for. Yeah, my mind is not, as it probably should be, as we're promoting auction listener leagues. I don't know yet.
All right, but yeah,
it's above Mason Wynn. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and Ryan's in at that ADP, so you got that going for you. All right, to the Discord. Here we go. Sean Chard says, we already kind of hit this. Are you buying Bo Bichette contract here, bounce back, and is the market – or so, yes, you are. Is the market correction on Adamas happening? He seems to be falling in drafts. I'd say so, but what do you think?
Yeah, the market has dinged Willy Adames at this point at an 82 ADP for going to San Francisco, and it's at a point where I think it's an okay pick there. I think that's about where he should be going.
Yep, it is where he should be going because he is still better than the next guys coming up. But
yes,
that's the difference. GP Churchill says, roster construction question: do you go into a DC planning to take two shortstops and one second baseman among your first 23 draft picks? And rely on filling your bench with more second basemen than shortstops? So we'll start with that. Do you plan on getting two shortstops and a second baseman amongst your first 23 picks? And do you rely on filling your bench with more second basemen than shortstop?
I don't even know if I'd fill a bench with a second baseman because it's just so bad. But yeah, I want my middle infielder to be a shortstop. In a DC, yes, I would do. Yeah, I would fill with more second baseman in your first few reserve rounds. I would go early second base reserve round. Like a Thyro Estrada, I think is a perfect kind of spot for that to get your backup second base.
Yeah, so get two shortstops and a second base early that you want to start, and then get your second baseman probably before your shortstops. I agree with that completely. Yep. Then he goes, does your planned roster construction change with respect to second base, shortstop, and middle if the draft is a 30-round Fab League?
I'd still probably snag Tyro in a fab league, but if there's not a second baseman I'm interested in reserve line, I'm fine just having one second baseman, and if it doesn't work out, I'll be fabbing second base. It's just the state of the position for me.
And you'll be able to this year, it feels like. So wouldn't worry too much. Sean Chard has another one here. Which post 200 ADP shortstop are you guys buying above their ADP? Or is the simple answer the new mascot?
That's the simple answer. Willie Castro at 236, especially in draft and holds, man, that position eligibility. That's why he is the mascot, because he gets brought up on every single show and will get brought up on our next two episodes, third base and outfield. I would also go Trevor Story. I would go Trevor Story. You sold me on that one. I don't see much else after that, man. No. I don't see much post 200 that really has any like
value.
Yeah, I just it gets real bad after 200 outside of those two guys.
All right, our buddy Aaron Gifts says, who is not on this list that should be next year? I guess I'll go with Acuna.
I'll go Sweeney.
The problem is Acuna will be second base. He won't be on this list.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So we'll go Sweeney. Like I would say Lawler, but he is what 29th on this list. But it's a tough question, Aaron. It will happen. It will happen for sure. Where it comes from, that's very tough. But I like your Sweeney argument quite a bit.
You know who probably will be on the list next year, but it won't because of production this year? Colson Montgomery of the White Sox, because he'll probably be the starting shortstop next year. But I don't know if he has enough this year to get up there, but he probably has a top 30 ADP next year, if that makes any sense.
I mean, just off the list is guys like, well, yeah, like Jacob Wilson, Josh Smith, Dylan Moore, Ernie Clement, Brooks Lee, maybe, like if you believe in a sophomore rebound.
Jacob Wilson could be one if he hits for average the way they say he will. So
I think we have a question on him, but yes, we do.
Our buddy Martin Sikulski says, specifically for Bubba, talk about Fitzgerald and what realistic expectations are for 2025. I think most people assume he played over his head last season. What did you see as a fan of the team? Oh, he played over his head. There's no problem with that. But the two things I will say when it comes to Fitzgerald, the power is real. The power is very real. That's what he's had. But the speed's even more real. That's what, and I know we talked about that at times last year, and they started running towards the end, it felt like. But like projections have him at 19-19. I think that's fair because they have him at 230 also. Like the 280 average we saw, he did it 310 to AAA too, which was surprising. But to me, you're hoping for like 240 with him. But if he plays a whole season hitting so I think the 230's a little too low, but I don't think he's hitting 280, if that makes sense. So 240, 250, somewhere in there. But if he can do that, I still think he's a 2020 guy. And that's what's enticing about this position. Now, they got Willy Adames. The idea is to play Fitzgerald at second base. That's what Posey's been saying. We'll see how that all plays out. But the projection, I think, it's fair, maybe a little low, honestly. I think a lot of it's just the track record is not there to give him a proper projection, because most systems need a bigger track record. And there's still questions about what are we doing with Fitzgerald, or what are the Giants doing with Fitzgerald, is what I would say.
Covered it well. I am not in on Fitzgerald this year.
I don't have that many shares outside of, I think, our meatball draft, which I took him in like the 10th round. All right. Hunter24 says, is Xander undervalued going later than pick 150? Good, bad, average, impossible, 2020. That's a guy we didn't talk about, and I can get behind that comment, honestly.
Yeah, I would have had Xander in my 11 through 20, but we did talk about him at second base. So I think Xander Bogaerts is absolutely fine at 150. And it's even better if you get him at a middle, because with second short eligibility, you are guarding yourself from injury pretty well, taking Xander as a middle infielder. But even as a starting second baseman or shortstop, the thing with Xander is, like, if I'm drafting him there, it's probably as my second baseman and not my shortstop. But I think Xander's a very good pick. I would take him over Bo Bichette, who is, and I speak for you in that, who's going seven picks ahead of him at 146.
So, I 100% agree with that last comment, especially. Sure. Martin Sikulski also, or he says, yeah, he took Xander in his middle infield at his OCQ earlier today. Ben Tidd, okay, got that one. TDK90 wants to know about Jacob Wilson. So that was a Jacob Wilson comment. And if you got anything on him, I'll let you go first. It's been a tough one for me to try to decipher when I look at the Oakland A's in general, let alone Jacob Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, it's not quite Mason Wynn bad in terms of Jacob Wilson has 6 career stolen bases in the minors, 8 career home runs in the minors. Like, yeah, the batting average can be elite, but like, can you roster someone who may not get 5 homers or 5 steal or 5 steals? Like, I know the price is super cheap, but like, I just think Jacob Wilson sets you back very far in homers and steals that I'm not really interested.
Yeah, the Jacob Wilson talk is like they're hoping he's going to be a kind of elite batting average guy like he showcased before he got drafted. And I think that's the goal with Jacob Wilson. And then it's also he's young. Can he develop anything? If you look, he's only been in the minors for 2 years, and they're kind of both shortened seasons. They're like not even full seasons in general. So I think that's kind of the optimism behind Jacob Wilson and the fact that he should play every day. ADP is 340. So I get it. He's going like after Ha-Seong Kim. I'd take him over Caballero. He's going right in front of Jordan Lawler. Like, Wilson's got a job. Lawler doesn't. Like, I guess the question I would say is, like, Wilson or IKF? Like, where would you go on that one?
IKF has triple eligibility, leading off, actually runs. Like, I don't.
Yeah. But, like, the Wilsons you're betting on breaking out, that's kind of what you have to hope for. And I can't do that just yet.
I mean, my guy has to hit, like, 400. Yeah. So I don't know.
Our buddy Steve Stoughton says, thoughts on taking 2 shortstops in the first 15 rounds, so the top 150 picks. I feel like that the position falls off a cliff after Pena wins Swanson. He agrees. I've been drafting a lot of teams with one of those 3 as my MI. Yeah, we're on the same page.
Yep. Agreed. Thumbs up. No dismissive hand wave. It's a thumbs up for me.
Yep. Michael Cicchini says, will or can Bubba stop talking up Wynn, please? Maybe then even dog him a bit. Just kidding. Oh. Didn't have to actually, well, you dogged him for him, so there you go.
So Cicchini's in on Wynn too. I might be outnumbered on this, but I tried to dog him as much as I could.
Our buddy Scott says, I was gonna ask something similar to Stoughton's question about taking shortstop early. He says, if your number one, and it also helps because if your number one shortstop misses time with an injury, you have a nice insurance policy, which is
because Scott's point. Saying grab 2 even earlier.
Yeah, that's
like
true. Even
potentially
earlier.
Like Abrams and Betts or Lindor. Like I just in general, I'm not against it. I'm not against going double tapping a position in the top 50. I don't think that's a huge
deal. I go back to my story every year. The year the Guilds won the OC overall, I was in that draft, and he took Pete Alonso like in round 2 or 3, and then Paul Goldschmidt in like round 5. He took them both. It's the old adage, just pick the best for your team. Like, fill your positions later. In the end, you just want the combined numbers of statistics, however you get there. And if these guys give you the best way to get there, that's what you should be taking. That simple.
That was my biggest takeaway of that podcast. I remember that. I remember when he said that. I was like, yeah, I mean, it's simple, but
it makes so much sense.
Get the players.
So I try to tell myself every time I'm drafting, but sometimes, you know, when you're at that 1 minute clock, you're scrambling and you forget these things, and sometimes that's why the slow draft is nice, because you're like, you know what, I'm just gonna build, so we're gonna do.
Hey, but that 1 minute clock is coming, my friend.
Yeah, Monday night, folks. Monday.
Bury the lead here. I guess we didn't announce that at the top, but we're not.
I was saving that for Thursday show. We have Beat Bubba OC coming your way Monday night. I think it's half full already. If you guys want to jump in there, I'll be live streaming that on the Bench with Bubba show on the same YouTube feed as this, with buddy Ben Titt will be joining me to heckle me or keep me sane. I don't know what yet, but he's probably too nice to heckle me.
I gotta run Ben through some Bubba boot camp on how to properly heckle during a draft. We may have to,
if it's, you guys will have to come out for that one and have some fun.
Yeah. Yep.
But all right, Ryan, before we head out of here, I'm just going to remind everybody, the last day to sign up for the Listener League auctions is Friday, January 24th, and you must be a paid or free Patreon member and message us to let us know either via Discord, Twitter, or email. So let us know all those things. Anything else before we wrap up, Ryan?
Covered it, man. Good show. Good show, I think.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Shortstop position's a good one. It is definitely some people think positions are deep, so you don't focus as much. I think you should focus more, but make sure you crush the position. Don't let it just slide by type thing. So I hope you guys got something out of this, and it'll be even more fun when we, like I said, we do those pockets of ADPs. It'll stand out even more, I think, of how good that shortstop position is and how you should hopefully attack it. But until next time, make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm on Twitter at BDentric. And for now, this was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 204. Catch you all next time.